92.3 WTTS, Craig Shank with the Postmarks ahead of their performance in Indianapolis in support of their latest album, Memoirs at the End of the World. Now, from what I've heard, Tim was covertly recruited to sing for the band, so would you mind speaking about that?
Yeah, there's a little place called Dada in South Florida where, you know, we do band nights, DJ nights, you know, the typical stuff. But on Mondays, they would have an open mic, and I would hang out there once in a while, and that's where I saw Tim play the open mic, play a couple songs, and I knew that Chris was looking for a unique female singer, not the typical kind of bar singer, you know, like Janis Joplin, Joan Osborne type of thing, but someone very unique. So that was on a Monday. Following Saturday was the DJ night, and I basically booked her to play, open up for another band. And you're right, she had no idea. It was really auditioning for myself and Chris, because I brought him down, and of course we loved what we heard.
And how did you feel when you found out about that process?
It took me a while to warm up to the idea, because I had never been in a band. I mean, with my friends when I was younger, we'd make up songs and stuff, but never like this kind of serious, we're going to make music and put out a record. And it was intense, but I warmed up to it, and I'm really glad I did.
To me, it seems like the new album has sort of a cinematic feel, maybe something that would be off of a Sean Connery era James Bond film. Was that by design, or was it kind of a natural evolution from the first album?
There were hints of it on the first record. I mean, Chris and I are huge fans of John Barry, who did most of the Bond soundtrack, but none of the kind of big, huge orchestral bombastic side of it, which we wanted to bring in. So that was definitely calculated.
Amelie was a big, like, kind of influence on the first album, you know, something that was just very kind of colorful and, like, kind of gentle. But, you know, doing all the press for it, we just always kind of ran our mouths off that we were into, you know, movie soundtracks and, you know, wanted to do music that was very cinematic and kind of felt like we kind of had to put our money where our mouth was, you know. So in this one, it was a much more kind of conscientious effort to integrate that into the whole sound and the fabric of like what we do.
With a sound that's so deeply layered and has a lot of different textures, what are some of the challenges of bringing that to a live setting?
You really don't want to try to recreate it note for note. You kind of want to replace a lot of the orchestral elements with more natural kind of quote-unquote rock band elements. So instead of strings, you add another guitar. So Tim picked up the guitar.
There's a lot of 60s elements in the music that we're making, and I think there's a way to try to morph, you know, those elements like into like what we're doing. So live, you know, it's weird. It's like, you know, the recorded version will have mainly the orchestral stuff with some elements of shoegaze, and then the live version becomes like much more shoegaze with some elements of like the orchestral stuff like thrown in.
We have some backing tracks, which are mostly percussion and whatnot. You don't want to hear a huge orchestra behind you because it's like, you know, where's the orchestra or whatever, you know. So it's definitely more of a rock show. People are very surprised when they come to our shows. It's a lot louder than they think it's going to be. It's a lot heavier. Some of them aren't really prepared.
And speaking of things that your fans might not be prepared for, there's a clip of you guys on Yo Gabba Gabba on YouTube. So could you tell us about how you got to be on that show and writing the song? I think it was about balloons, wasn't it?
The songs were already written, and basically they sent them out to the artist that they chose and said, you know, turn this into something that sounds like you.
Because of the timings of things, they kept on sending us like demos to work on for the animated sequence, because that's what they wanted us to be involved with. They would send one out and they were like, oh no, actually another artist is going to be doing that, and here's another one. And they're like, oh no, another one. So it kept on going back and forth, and I think they finally, they felt really bad about it, because each time I'd started demoing, you know, what we were going to do for it. So I actually started putting work into at least like three or four, you know, Yo Gabba Gabba tracks. They kind of offered us a consolation prize. They knew we were going to be on the road. And they said like, well, you know, because of all the troubles, you want to come out and play live? And I'm like, you know, heck yeah. I mean, I think that's better than the animated sequence. They were totally cool. They were totally open to having like suggestions. And I said, you know, I'd love to do it like on a, you know, variety shows from the 70s and have us on different tiers. And obviously it'd be really cool to, you know, because of the song itself, to be like, you know, have the floor covered in balloons. And we were going to try to do the whole, like, kind of Spinal Tap, you know, with the flower people, actually focus in on Brian, like, actually going, balloons, like, you know, just, and they were almost into it, you know, because that's where their mindset, like, is, but, you know, we opted not to do that in the end.
A lot of people may think that you're in a touring band, that you're able to support yourself with just selling records and being on the road. But I know that you've done some work in graphic design, and Tim was a chemistry major. So could you tell us about what you do outside of this band and how that has an impact on your schedule with the band?
It's hard, being out here. I was talking to somebody about it earlier today. I think people have a lot of misconceptions about, the road. And obviously the bigger you get, maybe those misconceptions become, reality. But for the smaller bands, it's just constant work, where you're out there.
I think we're all kind of lucky. I'm able to work freelance, do either writing or graphic design. Tim was able to take off school here and there. Chris is very lucky. He gets to actually work from the road. They're still paying him, as long as he has contact with the computer.
I've kind of found, I think, that when people see that you're actually chasing your dreams and you're pretty honest and, pure about it, they kind of, champion you on. I think in life it's very rare that, you actually see people trying to slay the dragon, if you will. So they get kind of excited and kind of rally behind you, and I think that they're, willing to kind of work with you a little more to help you achieve those things. And, they've known me for a while there. They know that I've been trying to do this. So they've seen this whole hobby grow into something that could potentially be a whole other profession. And they know that I'm pretty passionate about it. They're pretty cool.
But you have to. We don't make any money really doing this.
We break even. We don't spend money.
Maybe not. I don't know. You get paid, when your stuff plays on radio, you get some money, that kind of thing. But as far as living or there's no way we could, that would be ridiculous.
We do it for the love.
And what are you most proud of with your experience in the Postmark so far?
I think just making friends. I think that's what's cool about a band. Not every band does it, but when you get together in a band, you make not only just friends, you go on the road, but she's just laughing. I'm trying to be sensitive, and you're just laughing. Thank you very much. No, I'm done. Interview over.
No, there's something. I wasn't laughing at you.
I'm not proud of the music or anything. Please, monkeys can make that music. But I have lifelong friends.
Yeah. Proud of the fact that it's, reaching further than just our city, which is what happens to most people who live where we are. And any town, really, right? There's so many local bands and nobody ever gets to hear their music, and we get this country and internationally, so it's pretty cool.
I would say the whole production of this latest album, I think the way that we all kind of rallied around each other and came together to kind of write something that I feel is much stronger than the first one. With the first album, I was the writer of all the music on it, and I had a very clear focus, and I wanted to do that because I knew exactly where I wanted to kind of go with it, and I just didn't want to kind of get in a room and jam for 6 months and find something that was going from something amorphous into something that would actually take shape. It's I wanted to kind of cut to the chase. Luckily everyone else in the band were very agreeable to that, and it kind of worked out into something that now we know what the sound is, or at least what the parameters are. We can kind of keep on expanding that and expanding that. So to go from working on the album, the first album, for 2 years, and then jump down to 6 months for something that sounds that much bigger and I think more impressive, I think this is a testament to the bond that we have between the band members.
92.3 WTTS, Craig Shank with the Postmarks, and their new album is Memoirs at the End of the World.